ओम नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय। टू ऑफ द श्रीमद् भागवतम चैप्टर 26 एंटाइटल्ड द हेलिश प्लैनेट्स वर्स नंबर 11। ये तु इह यथैवा मुना विहिंसिता जन्तवः परत्रयमयातनाम् उपगतं त एव रूरवो भूत्वा तथा तम् एव विहिंसन्ति तस्माद्रौरवम् इति आहुरूरुरिति सर्पाद् अतिक्रूर सत्वास्यापदेशः। ट्रांसलेशन एंड पर्पोर्ट बाय हिज डिवाइन ग्रेस एसी भक्तिवेदांत स्वामी श्रील प्रभुपाद। ट्रांसलेशन: इन दिस लाइफ एन एनवियस पर्सन कमिट्स वायलेंस against many living entities. Therefore, after his death, when he is taken to hell by Yamaraj, those living entities who are hurt by him appear as animals called Rurus to inflict very severe pain upon him. Learned scholars call this hell Raurava. Not generally seen in this world, the Ruru is more envious than a snake. Purport: according to Srila Sridhar Swami, the Ruru is also known as the Bhara Shringa. Atikrurasya Bhara Shringakhya Sattvasya Apadesha Sangya. Srila Jiva Goswami confirms this in his Sandarbha. Ruru Shabdasya Swayam Muninaiva Tika Vidhana Lokeshu Aprasiddha Evayam Jantu Visheshaha. Thus, although the Rurus are not seen in this world, their existence is confirmed in the Shastra. Hare Krishna. So this is a very scary chapter, description of the hellish planets. And in today's verse, the description of the hell called as Raurava is being given. A person who is envious and commits violent acts towards others is taken to a hell known as Raurava. And huge birds called the Rurus, who are more envious than snakes, come and attack such a person and give him intense amount of pain. I was just going through the Oxford Dictionary to find out what the meaning of this word hell is. Nowhere in the dictionary there is this meaning of hell being a planet given. There is no such conception of hell being a planet. Only when we read through the scriptures like the Srimad Bhagavatam or even the Bible, then we get a conception of hell as it being a planet. But when I was going through the meaning of this word hell in the Oxford Dictionary, it said hell means a place or a state of great suffering. It could mean a place where there is great suffering, or it could even mean a state, a mental state where there is great amount of suffering. For instance, once a man went to office and he came back to his house early. So the wife asked the man, "Why have you come back so early today?" The man replied by saying that my boss shouted at me and told me go to hell. So that's the reason I've come back home early. So family life where Krishna is not the center, service to God is not the center, where relationships are conflicting, could even mean hell to a person, a place where there is suffering. There's one boy I know in the congregation. This boy was walking with his father and he wanted to go to pass water, so he gave his cell phone to his father to hold. So suddenly the phone rang. And the father saw the caller ID. The caller ID was hell. So when the son came back, the father asked, "Who's this hell? You know, where did this phone come from?" He said, "Go and check the number, the details of the number." But the father opened the details, and this was the caller ID hell was for his home number. The same home where he lives, he gave the caller ID hell. Now the parents are devotees. And the son is also a devotee, a very good devotee. But he puts for home the caller ID, hell. So one of our devotees, he was telling the story to one of our devotees, and this devotee asked, why did you call your home as hell, you know? He said, what to do? Parents are devotees, I am devotee, but they don't understand me. I am a teenager, they don't understand what I'm going through. I want to take Krishna consciousness my way, but somehow or the other, they are pushing me to take Krishna consciousness. Therefore, I consider home to be hell. Now all are devotees, but this becomes a place of suffering. Because the parents are not understanding the child, or the child is not understanding the parents. So interesting meaning, a place or a state of suffering is what is referred to as hell. So I was thinking of six different levels at which hell could be understood. First is gliding down to the lower regions. Physically, there are planets called the hellish planets, the description of which we are reading in this canto. Physical region called hell, where a person is sent and is given a lot of suffering for all what he has done in this world. Like for instance, we are reading the description of the Raurava planet, hellish planet. Someone is envious, commits violent acts, he is taken to a physical place called Raurava and is punished for what he has done. Gliding to lower regions. Second is gliding down to lower species of life. One may not actually go to a hellish planet, but because of one's karmic activities, one is reborn in a lower species of life. Even that is hellish existence. Like for instance, in the 8th canto of the Srimad Bhagavatam, there is description of how Maharaj Indradyumna offended a great Brahmana sage. And Shukdev Goswami explains, Tasma imam shapam adada sadhur ayam duratma krita buddhiradya vipravamanta vishatam tameshram yatha gajastabdamatir sa eva. It says, Tasma imam shapam adad asadhur. Tasma, therefore, imam to Maharaj Indradumna, shapam, the curse was given by this great Brahmana sage. What was the curse? The Brahmana sage spoke to Maharaj Indradumna and said, I am duratma, abuddhir krita. He is a duratma, he is a fallen person. And he has very low kind of intelligence. He is practically in ignorance, therefore he has offended a Brahmana like me. Vipra avamanta. He has insulted a vipra like me, and thus I curse him to vishatam tamishram, to enter into hellish region. What kind of hellish region should he enter? Yatha gajah stabda matimsa eva. He's not sending him to a hellish planet. Here vishatam tamishram refers to gaja sharira, the body of an elephant. So here is an evidence where gliding down to lower species is also considered as hellish existence. Vishatam tamishram, entering into hellish region. The third level of hell is gliding down to lower consciousness. So first is one goes to a hellish planet and is punished. Second is, one stays on the same planet Earth but goes down to a lower species and is punished. In an animal species, for instance, Gajendra. A third is, one stays in the same species, human body, but glides down to lower consciousness. And when one goes down in his consciousness, when material desires spring in his life, in his heart, then a lot of suffering comes about in his life, and thus it is equivalent of hell. Bharat Maharaj, for instance, is a good example. Bharat Maharaj, by the practice of Krishna consciousness, by the practice of yoga, had raised his consciousness to the level of bhava. But by getting attached to the deer, Bharat Maharaj's consciousness came down. Gliding down in consciousness, material consciousness, got attached to a deer, forgot all of his spiritual practices. The deer became a distraction, vikshepa on his spiritual path. his consciousness came down. He who was thinking of Krishna was now simply thinking of a deer. He whose consciousness was fixed completely with one pointed attention in serving the lotus feet of the Lord, now his consciousness was fixed in serving the petty needs of the deer, in terms of the physical needs, grass, in terms of the emotional needs, some affection. So much so, his consciousness glided down. At the last moment of his life, he thought of the deer and had to take another birth, which means suffering. So gliding down to lower consciousness is also considered to be hellish. The fourth level is gliding down to the material world itself. Why do we need to go to a hellish planet or just go to an animal species to experience suffering? The very fact that we come to this material world is hellish existence. When the living entity gives up the shelter of the Supreme Lord and the spiritual world and comes to this material world, all he has to go through is suffering. Hell means a state or a place of suffering. Whether it's heaven, whether it's earth, or it's physical hell. Everywhere in the material world, there is simply suffering. Therefore, the material world in itself is hell. Right. Lord Krishna says, Abrahma Bhuvana Loka Punaravartino Arjuna. From the topmost planet, Brahma Loka, to the lowermost planet, Patala Loka, everywhere there is simply suffering. Suffering in different ways, shapes and forms. Suffering that takes different attractive colors at times. But it's only suffering. So leaving the supreme abode of the Lord and coming down to this material world of suffering, gliding down to this material world, in itself is hellish existence. The fifth kind of hellish existence is, after having taken to spirituality, one comes to this material world and wants to take to spiritual life, but is misled to enter into impersonalistic schools of thought. And therefore, when one seeks for impersonal liberation is also hellish. Why is it hellish? It is hellish because it's only suffering from the point of view of not getting the association of the Lord. The nature of the soul is not Satchit Shanti. The nature of the soul is Satchit Ananda. This Ananda can only be experienced by serving the Lord. After the soul goes to the Brahma Jyoti, at most one, what can one experience? Some Shanti. But that's not the nature of the soul. Therefore, for lack of joy, for lack of Ananda, in spite of having Shanti, he is suffering. And therefore Prabhupada says, such a soul, even after having gone to Brahma Jyoti, falls down to this material world to do some philanthropic work by opening some schools or hospitals. Once again, gliding down to the material sphere. So gliding down to the lower regions, gliding down to the lower species, gliding down to lower consciousness, gliding down to the material world, and gliding down to the Brahma Jyoti, from the Brahma Jyoti back to the planet Earth. Therefore, Prabodhananda Saraswati says, Kaivalyam Narakayate. Liberation for a great devotee of the Lord is also hellish, suffering only. Therefore, it is important for us to understand everything from Krishna's point of view. Like a few days back, Govind Prabhu was mentioning, Prabhupada said, Krishna consciousness means to see everything from Krishna's point of view. I was recently reading a story about Srila Prabhupada. Srila Prabhupada came to Detroit. Srila Prabhupada had a very peculiar way of saying Detroit. He would say Detroit as destroyed. Destroy it. He had a very peculiar way of saying it. Destroy it. So Prabhupada came to Detroit. When he came to Detroit, the temple president's son, who was about 3 years old, he had heard a lot about Srila Prabhupada. Prabhupada this, Prabhupada that, Prabhupada is like this, Prabhupada like that. And Prabhupada came, he went straight to the temple hall sat on the Vyasa's son to give his Srimad Bhagavatam class. And the temple president's son, who was only 3 years old, was in his room, and he heard that Prabhupada has come, so he came running. And he had worn a flannel pajama, a very soft cotton pajama, and kind of a soft cotton shirt. And as he came running, he was at the door of the temple. Prabhupada was sitting on the Vyasasan, and as soon as he saw Srila Prabhupada, he was so excited about it, he wanted to run, and he just slipped over. And when he slipped over, he came sliding right to where Srila Prabhupada's Vyasasan was, like a flat out dandavat, you know. Came skating to Srila Prabhupada like a dandavat. And he came right in front of Srila Prabhupada and was like this. You see? Prabhupada said, wow, this is great. This is called utsaha, enthusiasm. Just look at his utsaha, how he has come to offer dandavats. Of course, Prabhupada didn't know the story that he slipped over and came sliding just as a mistake. Of course, nothing happened to him. He wasn't hurt. When I was reading the story, I was quite struck by the usage of the word pajama. It's an interesting word. All through my life, I kept hearing the word pajama. You know, in Hindi, Marathi, they say pajama. So I never knew that even in English, there is a word called pajama. So I thought I should look into the dictionary to find out what the meaning of this word pajama was. I went to the Oxford Dictionary to find out what the word pajama meant. It said, a piece of cloth stitched in such a way that covers your feet. I was quite impressed because it meant the same in all languages I heard pajama or pyjama. So then I went further and I saw what is the origin of the word pajama in English. The origin of the word pajama is the Urdu word pyjama. Right. That's where the English word pajama came from, the Urdu pyjama. Pai in Urdu also means feet and jama means cloth. So cloth that covers the feet is called a pyjama, and that's the English meaning also, a piece of cloth stitched in a way to cover the feet. And after having read this, I came across a very interesting statement that Srila Prabhupada makes. Srila Prabhupada makes a statement. Material nature acts like a dictionary for the spirit soul. It was interesting because when I was reading this story, to find out the meaning of the word pajama, I had to look into the dictionary what it meant. I had to look into the dictionary what its origin was. And as I was just finishing, I read the statement. Material nature is like a dictionary for the spirit soul. Which means, if the spirit soul wants to know the meaning of what's happening in life, if the spirit soul wants to know the meaning of what this world is all about, if the spirit soul wants to know the meaning of all the events and situations that take place in his life, he simply has to look into material nature, which is like a dictionary. A dispassionate look at how material nature functions could clearly reveal to us what is the meaning of life, what is the meaning of world, what is the meaning of all events and situations that take place in our life. Right. Badrinarayan Prabhu was giving a beautiful example. He said, archaeologists, they sometimes go and they dig into the stratums of the earth to find out different artifacts. And then they put together all of these artifacts. And after having put together these artifacts, they get a kind of a structure, sometimes a pot, sometimes a plate, earthenware. They make a form out of it. Put all these pieces together, they get a form. As soon as they see the form, the design, from the design flows the function. After they see the design of what they now made by sticking all of these pieces together, from the design flows the function. Oh, what is the function of this pot? Looks like it's a very slender and thin pot. Probably they may be using it for drinking liquor. They understand the function. From the design flows the function. And from the function flows the understanding of the society at that time. Right. So, okay, now this is a pot. We have put all the artifacts available together. We got a slender pot. The form From the design which we saw came the function that it's meant to drink liquor, and then we understand the society at that time, maybe 1,000 or 2,000 years back, depending on how old this piece is, according to their knowledge, of course. They understand what was the society. Maybe at that time there was liquor available, then they want to do research in terms of what were the varieties of liquor available, what were the kinds of people staying at that time. Right. So Badrinarayana Prabhu was giving this beautiful example and was explaining all the events, situations, things of this world can be compared to the artifacts. We must dig into this world to find out what's happening. We must dig into the world to see the explanations given in here. We put all of these together, the information given in the Srimad Bhagavatam, our personal experience of what's happening in life, the experience of other people. All of these are compared to artifacts. When we put all of these artifacts together, we get a form, an entire picture of what this world works like. We see the design of this world. From the design of this world, we understand what is the function of this world, what is the purpose of this world. Therefore, as Govind Prabhu was mentioning, we must see everything from Krishna's point of view. We must see the material world, heaven, hell or earth, whatever it is, from Krishna's point of view. We may see hell from our own point of view, but we must also see hell from Krishna's point of view. Like, I was reading a funny story. There was this business giant, the owner of the most successful software company in the world. He somehow or the other lived his life and he was dead. He came to St. Peter for judgment. And St. Peter said, look, these are the good things you have done and these are the bad things you have done. Now what do you want first? You want to go to hell, heaven first or hell first? He said, let me just go and take a round of heaven and hell and see what it is all about. And after having gone through and seen, then I'll decide. So he first went to hell, just at the gates. And at the gates he saw what's going on there. There were first-class beaches, right? Beaches like in California. Just the right temperature, just the right climate. Women running around here and there. Right? Beautiful, cool breezes. Fantastic climate to enjoy. He thought, that's cool, really good. Then he left that place and went to see what's there in heaven. And in heaven he saw a few cuckoo birds singing. And climate was good. And there was all that stuff called worship and God. He said, not much of a difference there, but here there is God. So I better go to hell. So he chose to go to hell. So he went and he lived in hell. So St. Peter was on a walk, so he came to hell. And immediately this person started asking, hey, what's happening here? I saw that there was these beautiful beaches and sands and women, nice climate, cool breezes. And look at what it is all about. So much suffering. They're kicking me. They're whacking me. They're making me go through all this kind of suffering. What was all of that you showed me? St. Peter said that was a screensaver. Right? That was just the screensaver. Just the beginning. Just to show you what it was to attract you to come here. So even a person wants to go to hell, he's only looking about how to get my enjoyment there. So still seeing hell from one's own point of view. Krishna consciousness means to see everything from Krishna's point of view. To see why this world is made, why hell is made, and therefore start working in our life based on what Krishna wants us to do. So when we see any building being constructed, Suhotra Prabhu explains in his book, Substance and Shadow, there are four causes that are needed to make the building. First is called the material cause, Upadan. Second is called the formal cause, Swarupena Pradhan. Third is called the efficient cause, Nimittayavan. And fourth is called the purpose or Artha Vishesha. Anytime any structure has to be made, these four things are needed. To make a building, the materials are needed, material cause. Right. Cement, brick, iron girders. That's called upadan. This building needs materials to make it. Secondly, it needs a form, a plan. Right? The engineer makes the form, the plan on his sheet. That's called the swarupena pradhan. The form will differ based on the purpose of the building. If the building is a temple, it has a different form. If the building is a residential complex, it has a different form. If the building is a jail, it has a different form. Right. Swarupena pradhan, the form of the building. Third is nimittayaman, which means those who are going to be responsible, the nimitta, for putting this building together, for putting all the construction elements and giving it the form, the working crew. And fourth is artha vishesh or purpose. This is the most important, the purpose. Because as soon as the purpose is defined, the materials and the form will be defined. For instance, if the purpose is just a residential complex, you want to build a residential complex, then you don't need stone bricks to build the walls, isn't it? Simple ordinary bricks are sufficient. Cement blocks are sufficient to make the building. The form will also change. The form will simply be a building, maybe 30-floored, 40-floored building. So the upadan and the swarupena pradhan, the materials and the form, depend on the purpose. If a jail is to be made, then the materials can't be ordinary bricks. Huge stones need to be used to make the wall. Right? The form also has to be different. It can't just be a building like that. A huge area, huge walls, right, covering the jail so that the prisoner can't run away easily. The purpose decides what materials are to be used and what form is to be given. And then, of course, we have the working crew who puts it all together. Similarly, when we see the material world, the material creation, if we compare it to a huge building, then these four causes are needed. First, upadan, or the material causes. What are the materials that go in making this world? Earth, water, fire, air, ether. These are the materials that have made this world, this creation. What is the form of this world? The form and the materials will depend upon the purpose. And what is the purpose? The purpose is to frustrate the desires of the living beings to enjoy separate from Krishna. All the materials are chosen, the form of this world is chosen with a single purpose in mind. And that is to frustrate every living being's desires to enjoy separate from the Lord. Right. Like Srila Prabhupada was giving an example. Prabhupada said, when I was a grihastha, I wanted to buy a telephone. And I made my registered entry for the telephone. And for several years, didn't get a telephone. We know that in 1930s, 1940s, to get a telephone, you would have to wait in line for 20 years. The person would die, and then the telephone would come. Probably the telephone would have to be used for a Shraddha ceremony. Right? Because he was so attached to getting a telephone. And it was such a hype, such an excitement, that cinemas had songs based on telephones. And no one writes songs based on telephones today. But if you see old songs, there are Hindi songs based on telephones. It was such an excitement about telephones. Right? Srila Prabhupada went to the West in America, and he just registered for the phone. He paid. Srila Prabhupada said, I just paid $40, and the next day I had a telephone coming in my room. And Prabhupada said, I was so excited. The telephone was ringing, kring, kring. Prabhupada made the sound, kring, kring, kring. And then I picked up the phone and said, hello, Hare Krishna. And Prabhupada said, I was really feeling so excited about the fact that I now got a telephone. I wanted it in my early grihastha days. I have a telephone now. And it was really exciting for about a week. And then Prabhupada called some devotees and said, just see, I wanted a telephone, and now at 1 in the night, the telephone rings, kring, 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 and I pick up the telephone, and someone from across the world there asks, Swamiji, how are you? And Prabhupada said, 1 o'clock in the night is the time to ask, how are you? Premnidhi Prabhu can vouch for this fact. Both of us went to Hyderabad last year for a seminar at Infosys, and we were up in the night till about 2 o'clock, preparing our PowerPoint presentation, And at 2 in the night, I received a call on the cell. And I didn't know who it was. This is the time when I'm supposed to be resting. Picked up the phone. And someone said across from the phone, said, "Is this Gaur Gopal Das speaking?" I said, "Yes." Said, "Do you remember we met once on a train from Nasik to Bombay?" I said, "Yes, sir, I do remember, but I don't think this is the right time to talk about that. Any question you have or something wrong?" He said, "Yeah, I have a question. I was just seeing the serial Kaun Banega Karodpati, and in this serial they had a question on Mahabharat. I didn't know the answer. Could you kindly help me with that?" I said, "Sir, please see the time in your watch. It's 2 in the night. I could relate to so much to what Prabhupada was saying. Prabhupada said, "I have a telephone, so exciting, and now look at what it is, such a botheration." And he said, "Harsha Shoka." Right? So much enjoyment, get so excited, and then again suffering. Right? So, everything is designed in this world with a purpose of frustrating the desire of the living entity to enjoy separately from Krishna. Badrinarayan Prabhu was telling a story. In Detroit temple, there is a person who comes there, Indian gentleman, and he was from a very poor background, and all through his life he simply had to use hand-me-downs, hand-me-down books, hand-me-down clothes, hand-me-down toys, hand-me-down clothes, toys, books are the books, toys, clothes of all elder brothers, elder sisters, you know, all passed down. And we know how it was when the school time came. I remember myself also, when you'd have to get those old books. "No, I want the new ones." "Use the t-shirt of the elder brother." "No, I want the new one." This man had to use everything that came down. Sometimes the shirts would be loose, the buttons would all be off. And somehow or the other, he really worked it out. He was working hard. And finally, he decided to make his fortune in the United States. So he went to Detroit. And when he went to Detroit, he really worked hard, made a fortune. And after all of that, he decided, "Now I have young kids, I'm going to see to it that none of my young kids get torn hand-me-downs." Right? So he used to give his kids a huge amount of money. Right? "Take as many dollars as you want, go to the shopping mall, buy what you like," and his kids would come back with jeans torn in several places, right? All rags literally. And they call it designer wear, you know. With all those holes all over, it's designer wear. And you have to shell a hell lot of money, right? Several $1,000 to just get a jeans torn. Ripon was telling me he purchased a Levi's jean, right? With two holes right on the knees. And it cost him $500, right? A jean with two holes on the knees, designer Levi's jeans, cost him $500. We could imagine the state of that person, how much suffering he was going through now, that he gave such a huge amount of money to his kids just so that they don't have to wear torn clothes. And look at what these sons were wearing. Right. Absolutely frustrated. Right. Everything in this world is made with that purpose. All of the elements, earth, water, fire, air, ether, and a combination of all of them meant to frustrate our desires. Earth, we have massive earthquakes meant to frustrate our desires to enjoy separate from Krishna. Sometimes the temperature just goes so high up, the earth gets so hot, unbearable temperatures meant to frustrate our desires to enjoy separate from Krishna. Water, tsunamis, floods, Prabhupada says ativrishti or anavrishti, too much rain or less rain, meant to frustrate our desires to enjoy separate from Krishna. Fire, right? Homes on fire or volcanic eruptions, and most of all, the fire of digestion, right? Jatharagni, not working properly, meant to frustrate our desire to enjoy separate from Krishna. Earth, water, fire, air, ether, all elements. Well, the elements were chosen with that purpose. If the building is to be made in a certain way, the purpose is to live, the bricks are going to be chosen in that way. If the world is meant to frustrate our desires to enjoy separate from Krishna, each and every single element was chosen to give us misery. What to speak of when the combination is there in terms of the material body? How much frustration? How much potential does the toe have to give pleasure? No one ever thought that my toe gives me pleasure. But how much potential does the toe have to give us misery? The toe is hurt. God, it's a hell lot of misery. Right? So, we understand very well that all of these elements are meant to frustrate our desires and to enjoy separate from Krishna. So these are the elements, the upadan. Then there is a swarupena pradhan, or the formal cause. The form has to be such that will also support this principle of having us suffer. If we were to know that this material world doesn't give us pleasure, why would we want to be here? We have all seen a kaleidoscope. When we see a kaleidoscope, and a kaleidoscope only has a few pieces of glass of different colors. And then when we move it, all of these different glasses with different colors put together such attractive shapes and forms. There's only 5 or 6 or 7 pieces of glass, but combined together, they look so attractive that we are tempted to see it. Similarly, simply these 5 elements, earth, water, fire, air, or ether, like a kaleidoscope, but take so many different shapes and forms that we get attracted to it. Right? The same pieces, the same earth, water, fire, air, and ether can take the shape and form of a designer wear clothes. The same earth, water, fire, and ether can take shape of fantastic, cool-looking food. The same earth, water, fire, and air, and ether could take the shape of a man or a woman. And we could get attracted to it. Right? These 5 elements take such shapes and forms that we are attracted to go and enjoy these things. And when we try to enjoy these things separate from Krishna, then we know what happens. It was only designed to look like this. It was deceptive. Like there's this famous saying in English that looks are deceptive. When we go by the look of this world, the form looks so attractive, we are deceived to think that yes, I must try to enjoy this. And if I enjoy this, I can get pleasure. Right? But no. When we try to enjoy it, the reality is otherwise. We simply have to go through suffering. Then there is the Nimitta Yaman, the working crew. The working crew is Brahma. He is the one who's putting all of these elements together and giving a shape and form to the material world. And Artha Vishesh, or the purpose, is decided by the Supreme Lord Sri Krishna. Artha Vishesh, to frustrate the desires of the living entities to enjoy separate from Krishna. Which is the construction company that the contract is given to? Brahma and Sons, right? They are the ones who are putting it all together. What are the construction materials used? Earth, water, fire, air, and ether, upadan. What is the form? Swarupena pradhan, a form that looks very attractive, but is highly deceptive. Right. So whether it is earth, whether it is heaven or hell, everything is simply deceptive. Simply different kaleidoscopic combinations. Some combinations very attractive. Some combinations very repulsive. But both meant with the same purpose. To frustrate our desires to enjoy separately from Krishna. So when we start seeing the world from Krishna's point of view, when we start seeing all of the description of the hellish planets given herein from Krishna's point of view, we understand it's all meant with only one purpose. To frustrate me so that I can ultimately take shelter of his lotus feet. If I take shelter of his lotus feet, I can get out of all of this hellish existence. Whether it is gliding down to the lower regions, whether it is gliding down to lower consciousness, whether it is gliding down to lower species, whether it is gliding down to the material world, I can get out of this hellish existence, whichever type it is, and go back to the eternal abode of the Lord, where I do not have to suffer. To conclude, in the Padma Puran, there is a beautiful account which was narrated by Ananta Shesh. Lord Ananta Shesh gives a description of Janak Maharaj's visit to hell. Janak Maharaj, the king of Mithila, perfected his life by the discipline of yoga. A beautiful airplane from Vaikuntha, decorated with bells, came to receive Maharaj Janak from Mithila. Graciously, Janak Maharaj boarded the plane, and the plane took off. As the plane was flying, the breeze from Janak Maharaj's body came in and touched the bodies of the residents of the hellish planets. All of them very piteously started speaking to Maharaj Janak. All of them said, "Oh Janak Maharaj, you're such a great soul. Simply the breeze that touches your body, when it comes in contact with our bodies, we feel complete freedom from the suffering of this hellish existence. We pray to you, kindly stay here." He's going to Vaikuntha and they're giving him a detour. "Kindly come and stay with us here in hell. Because if you are here, simply by your presence here, we will completely be freed from all the torment and suffering that we are going through." Janak Maharaj came and stood at the gates of hell. Yamaraj was passing by, and as Yamaraj was passing by, Yamaraj saw Janak Maharaj standing there. Yamaraj said to Janak, "My dear Janak Maharaj, why are you standing here? I saw a Vaikuntha airplane going for you. You are on your way to Vaikuntha. What are you doing here? This is a place for people who commit sins. This is a place for people who do not remember the lotus feet of Lord Ramachandra. What are you doing here? Come on. I'll call the plane again. It's here, right here. Go further on your journey to Vaikuntha." Janak Maharaj said, "My dear Yamaraj, yes, I would definitely want to go to the spiritual world. Oh, why go there? All of these people are suffering so much, and simply the breeze from my body is helping them. Why not help them get rid of all the suffering that they're going through by staying here?" Yamaraj said, "These people, Janak Maharaj? You want to save these people? I'll give you an account of what these people did." And he started pointing out. He said, "This man, he had relations with his friend's wife. The same friend's wife who confided in him. And therefore, I am going to roast him on an iron stake for 1,000 years. After this, he's going to be born as a pig. And then, when his life as a pig is over, he'll be born in his, as a human, but he'll be a eunuch. This man here, he repeatedly raped the wife of another man. Therefore, he'll be roasted in a hell known as Raurava for 100 years. This wicked man stole the wealth of others and enjoyed. Therefore, I had his hands cut off, and then I shall cook him in pus and blood. This one did not even welcome or honor her guest who came to his house oppressed by hunger. I'm going to send him to a hell called Tamishra, where he's going to be cooked in fire. This shameless person, O Janak, criticized another, and this one here heard the criticism with great interest. Both of them have fallen into the dark well of hell, and I'm going to whack them left, right, center. This one who deceived his friend is being again roasted in a hell known as Raurava. After making all of these persons eat the fruits of their sins, I shall release them. Oh, best among men who have accumulated vast amount of religious merit, please leave this place. This place is no place for you." Look at these kind of people. You want to be compassionate to them? Right. Janak Maharaj had tears in his eyes. He's 1,000 years being roasted on an iron stake? Right. Burnt in fire, cooked in pus and blood? No. He said to Yamaraj, "Tell me, please tell me, how can all of these beings be completely released from this hellish suffering?" Yamaraj said, "They have never worshipped Lord Vishnu. They have never given submissive oral reception to the transcendental accounts of Lord Ram. There's no hope for them. But I can recall, there's only one hope. I remember, Maharaj Janak, one time you got up early in the morning. And as soon as you got up early in the morning, the first thing you did was with completely a pure heart and pure consciousness, you chanted the name of Lord Ram. That name you chanted was so pure. If you simply give the credit of that one Ram Nam which you chanted then to all of these hellish beings, all of them will be liberated from hellish sufferings." Janak Maharaj said, "No problem. That credit which I got, of chanting one Ram Naam purely. I give this credit of chanting one Ram Naam to all of these beings in this hellish existence. And immediately, at that moment, all of these beings were liberated from hellish suffering. Different kinds of planes came to them to take them to the different destinations of heavenly regions, simply being benedicted by the power of the chanting of the holy name of Lord Ramachandra. They all came and thanked Janak Maharaj for the causeless mercy that he had shown upon them. Therefore, freedom from hellish suffering, whichever kind it is simply possible by taking shelter of firstly a devotee like Janak Maharaj, who gives us shelter of the holy name of the Supreme Lord. And thus, by the shelter of a devotee and the shelter of Naam, one can be freed from hellish existence, whether it is in a lower species, whether it is in a lower region, whether it is in the material world, whether it is Kaivalya, or whether it is lower consciousness. A great devotee of the Lord, when we take shelter of a great devotee of the Lord, he has the potency by which he gives us shelter of Naam Prabhu. And when we take shelter of Naam Prabhu, all of this hellish existence is over. And then Prabodhananda Saraswati goes a step further, like Govind Prabhu explains. Then the material world, he says, is Vishwam Purna Sukhayate. Then there is no hell, heaven, material world. Wherever such a person is, he only sees happiness, because he is fixed in his consciousness in serving the lotus feet of Shri Naam Prabhu. Thank you very much. Hare Krishna. Grantharaj Srimad Bhagavat Mahapuran ki jai. Srila Prabhupada ki jai. Nitai Gaur Premanande.